one person went into cryo sleep and they woke up 5 years later, the stock market would still be trading every day, right? Those bots would wake up every day and trade the market.
It just depends on how long those UPS backups last. And then and then aliens land and they're like, oh, you know.
This functioning system.
Yeah, this is a cryptocurrency-based life form.
Today's episode is brought to you by Logs.io. Monitor, troubleshoot, and secure your environment using the open source you love at the scale you need with Logs.io's ELK and Grafana-based observability platform. Check it out at logs.io/stackoverflow and enter their giveaway to win a free Logs.io t-shirt. Full details available from Logs.io. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Stack Overflow podcast.
Hello.
Hey, Ben.
You guys want some good news? You ready?
I'm ready for good news.
I'm going to drop this in our group Slack chat for the podcast. You ready? It's loading. Here it comes.
Now I got to switch windows.
Here comes the boom.
Whoa. People are listening to our podcast.
Yeah, guys. We're going to hit 50,000 downloads in 7 days.
This turns out that a bunch of nerds in a room talking about questions and answers is just the way to go.
It's actually just my grandmother. She is quarantined right now and listening reloading a lot of times.
Yeah, she has one of those phone farms where she has like a bank of 1,000 phones and she just listens on every one of them.
My grandmother has a phone farm.
All three of us have created a lot of content. I find that people are very loving and they go, I listened to it. I have no idea what you were talking about. Like, it's just... Yeah.
Yeah.
They do say
that.
That's
what my dad says.
Yeah. Do we talk about complex things? I feel like we don't. I feel like we just, you know.
When you guys are talking about a GUID or when you're talking about Let's Encrypt, my dad's eyes just glaze over. You know,
it's a good reminder that there is a gap between our baseline and the rest of the world.
Yeah, that makes sense.
You know, I feel this way whenever I talk to like computer super geniuses who are working on like low level file system stuff. And I'll be like,
yeah. Or game developers.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's wild in there, man. The processor's doing like 80 things all at once. And they're like, yeah, that's a computer, you dork.
And I'm like, I know, I can turn that button green.
There's this awkward moment where you're still entranced by the magic in some way. And they're like, yeah, that magic died for me when I was like 19 in college. Anyway, good. Great. It's nice. Yes. It's nice to be popular for once in my life. You know what I do like about Stack is that because you're kind of old school and nerdy, there's no delicate transition. Like, it was just like, yeah, all right, you want dark mode? Here's dark mode. It wasn't like, dark mode's coming, little 4 second fade.
Yeah, a nice like onboarding. Here's what dark mode means. No, you know. You've been here before.
Yeah. If you'd like to receive email from us about future product announcements.
Exactly. It's just like, you want it? Click. Okay. Now, wait a minute. What if I want to go back to light mode?
You can't.
No!
It's the end.
It's permanent.
Where do I click?
It's like getting a tattoo. Yeah.
Is it the little stack tattoo? Where do I go? I want to go back to light mode.
Go back to user preferences, logged in, and you should see it on the upper right.
Our usability is amazing.
No, it is amazing. I think don't hide this. This is reality, right? Like, you do the thing, and immediately somebody's like, somebody on your own frickin' podcast is like, yeah, but wait, how do I turn it off?
Right.
Oh, I found it. It's under preferences, site settings, preferences.
I edit profile and settings.
Yeah. And then site settings and preferences.
Yeah. StackOverflow.com/users/preferences, or even better, there's an even better version of that.
Something that you should know is that Stack Overflow profiles have over 100 settings.
Wow.
You know what? I'm going with system setting. I like that.
Yeah, when you build your character in this RPG we call Stack Overflow, there are a lot of different choices.
Yeah.
Well, funny story, guys. You know, classic Stack Overflow, right? Like, let's let it all hang out. We posted this, and I was in the shipping party, my first ever shipping party, which was fun.
We wear hats. You have to wear hats.
Actually, no, talk that through. How do you guys ship? What's that like?
We all get a Google Hangout, and you have to bring the most ridiculous hat you own. This is actually one of my favorite things about joining, is I went on, and I bought a whole mess of fascinators. I have, like, 8 fascinators in my office. If you don't know what a fascinator is, it's like one of those great Kentucky Derby hats that you like wear, and they have like netting that goes in front of your face. It's pretty amazing. And so everyone gets their hat on, and the developer that's shipping, or like the developer that wrote the code, the product manager that was in charge of the process, and then any other developers that were involved. And then it's just a site setting, most of it. Usually it's just like a flag that needs to be flipped on our production environment. And we do it, a little bit of testing, and then it's off to the races.
Oh, that's nice. All right, so crazy hats, ridiculous hats.
Yeah, it's the most important part, really.
And then you actually push. You're there. Here we go.
Yeah.
And then we wait for the first meta comment, which is pretty good, but not dark enough.
Oh, did it happen? Did they actually do that?
They did. Mm. And luckily, we were able to say to them, challenge accepted, because tomorrow's April Fool's joke is ultra dark mode.
Oh, that's
but a reasonable. But it's not an April Fool's joke. It's a...
It's an April Fool's April optional Easter egg.
Care about it's an Easter you egg. And your well-being.
Yes. April 1st Easter egg is appropriate.
Yes. That's we're not hard. Pulling up a joke on it. We're not pranking anybody in this
time.
No,
you're
time
telling them what it is.
That was going to be our joke before jokes were no longer fit the mood.
It's ultra this, dark mode. It's absolutely unreadable.
This is a this is a wild project, right? Because it took a really long time to get this through production on all the sites and on and on. Mm. And like the promise of the web is that you modify 5 settings in a file.
That is the promise of the web.
That is the promise. And the reality is that an entire org had to make this relatively mission critical and somebody had to work on it for a year.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true.
And
yeah.
This is a technology forward tech firm focused on efficiency in producing. Like,
did you know that dark mode is actually a dark pattern, Paul? And that this came out of one of our podcasts? Did we talk about this?
No. Why is dark mode a dark pattern?
This came from Jess Lee. You can only use dark mode if you're a logged in user. Being a logged in user is a nice thing. So why don't you create an account and log in? Try out this dark mode.
Oh, I see. Yeah. It's tricky though, because then you can save things with cookies and it's just, yes, okay.
It makes it harder.
Lots of people have been rolling their own dark mode for Stack Overflow for a while, but.
It's just, life is wild. You know, people make choices. We'll get through this one. Logged in users, not logged in. We're all going to find a way together to get through this crazy thing.
So let me ask you a question. As programmers and people who work with systems and have done a little bit of front end, a little bit of back end, who've done databases, and as people who maybe dabble in some, you know, tougher languages, do you feel like you have, that gives you a perspective on the statistical realities of what's going on with the coronavirus pandemic? Because a lot of what I'm trying to understand is flattening the curve and exponential growth and, you know, things like that. And I have a bare bones idea and I'm trying to learn, but do you think being a programmer and engineer in some ways gives you some preparation for understanding things like this?
Yes, but never get near a keyboard. Before you touch that keyboard to share your opinions, stop
to
it.
To write your Medium post, yeah.
I mean, I think like you can understand what large numbers of things, I don't know. That's what I would say for myself. I think understanding large numbers and understanding what it means to flatten the curve, I think hopefully because of dealing with large numbers of people, yes, but not enough to educate others.
Right.
You know what I will say? So first of all, what Sarah said, like be very mindful of the advice you're giving as a genius right now, right? But I think more specifically, computers, especially when you're screwing up and you've written some method incorrectly, you get a tremendous sense of incremental and exponential growth leading to a complete breakdown of the system, right? You're like, well, I'll just put this in memory over here. And then you didn't really realize it was going to run 4 billion times and that the 4 billion each time would double. And so within 4 seconds, your cool little loop in the language you're learning about that was supposed to be so easy, you didn't memoize and you didn't, you know, your Fibonacci sequence went out of control. Now everything's crawled to a halt. So I think you get an instinct for numbers turning into other numbers very, very quickly. And so that part felt really familiar. You're like, oh, yeah, exponential doubling. Of course that could happen. Yeah, it'll be like a 36-hour period between something really bad and something unbelievably bad. That's real. That felt very real to me. First of all, curve flattening, all that stuff, all completely new. I don't know a damn thing about epidemiology except what I've seen in movies and read in, like, you know, random books. Right. So I feel that you can learn a programming language in 2 weeks and you can sort of use all the knowledge that you have beforehand and you can get pretty good, actually. You can get pretty capable. An entire discipline is different. There's just shading and culture and ways that people communicate.
Right.
And the correspondence between viral internet growth and viral virus growth.
Yeah.
You can't can't retcon your metaphors. You can't be like, oh, well, we know about how viral growth of our online services. I've been growth hacking for years. So, anyway.
Right.
And you can't roll it back if you're wrong is the thing, too. Like, a lot of people, like, I've gotten a lot of emails of, like, I have a basic understanding of how RNA works and I'm working on a vaccine. Here are the things you need to work on it, too. And right. I'm kind of like, no, I think I need a little bit more of an understanding of how vaccines work and that kind of thing. Like, I think there's a lot of people who know a little about a lot that are trying to, and it's like where the place it's coming from is really great, but it's not, it's ends up getting in the way of the professionals is the problem.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, I think as one of Khaled's favorite expressions is a mile wide and an inch deep. And so we have a lot of sort of limited knowledge of a lot of things. And this looks similar to things you've done. But if you're not actually a statistical epidemiologist, like maybe don't write the Medium post with the answer.
Look, I mean, we're all solutionists. We like to find answers to things. It sucks that the answer is stay home. It's a bad answer. It's boring. Yeah. I think like everybody, I'm watching the Cuomo press conferences pretty regularly.
My partner has fallen in love with Cuomo.
No, exactly. And it's like, Cuomo is the right person at this moment. So
Let's just say quickly, Andrew Cuomo, governor of New York.
Yes, thank you.
The most affected state with the most affected city.
And he's doing a good job of communicating, and he's communicating some very serious stuff and not pretending that that there's good news when there is no good news. But he has this little part where he's like, some personal thoughts. And you can start to see he's running out of personal thoughts. Like, you know, he'll be like, really? And then we... Yeah, he's like, then we made the spaghetti. And you're like 5 minutes in, you're like, this is kind of going. Like, I could, because he's out of personal thoughts. You can only inspire people so much. And they're like, I'm good on inspiration. I kind of just want to go outside now. So I think everybody is actually out of material. And so you go back and you're like, what can I do? And then you bring up R and you start writing some chart. There's a sociologist at Duke University named Kieran Healy, who I really like. I just follow him on Twitter. I think he's very, very smart. And like, he started messing around with the data. And then he was very, very clear, like, this is me messing around. Like, he's an R stats visualization person. He wrote a book about visualization. And he just sort of like, this is my personal exploration. But this is, I'm not doing this science. Be very mindful. And I think that's important.
Here's a tweet from Julia Silgi, one of our former data scientists. I just realized I had the Wikipedia article for statistics open, and I can't remember why. And then there's a GIF of a Pokemon saying, I have no idea what I'm doing. So even our best data scientists are at a bit of a loss right now. But yeah, I mean, I think one of the things you said is really important, which is like, we're all looking for solutions. We're all looking for the magic bullet. We're all trying to add new information, right? Add something new to the conversation. And the funny or the ironic thing about this is like, the best solution now is to stay apart and do nothing, right? Like the solution is I don't know, what am I, lack of activity.
Inactivity. No, that's right. Like, you're basically saying, I have to stay home so that things get better for doctors and nurses so they can care for people who are truly at risk, right? And it's like, that's not a Silicon Valley attitude.
Yeah.
There's this weird latent fuss going on online where like the Silicon Valley people are like, we called this and you, journalism, didn't call it. And you they're like calling for journalism to apologize. First of all, we do have to give them credit.
Ben, like, can you apologize on behalf of journalism?
Oh, God.
What did they call? Let me hear the full thing and then I'll offer my rebuttal.
So look, like VCs started posting notices at their VC firms, like we're not shaking hands right now, way in advance.
I haven't been shaking hands for years.
Okay. No, but this was about the pandemic, Sarah. not about like you...
But if you watch Silicon Valley, you know most good VCs don't shake hands anyway because they're antisocial weirdos.
Look,
whatever.
I don't know. I mean, whatever. California did a better job at this than, you know, they started 2 days earlier and they have fewer cases and so on. There's just like this weird, I'm just like, this is not the moment. This is not the moment for journalism in Silicon Valley to have a battle.
Yeah. Also, VCs, please don't dunk on journalists because you're going to do something dumb and we're all going to know about it.
Also, I could name plenty of prominent technologists who in like the week or two before we finally went into shutdown were saying like the panic is worse than the problem. So I could name you some very prominent technologists who got it ass backwards.
Well, there's a few things. Here's what I see. Culturally, journalism in general and just in general, we are not good at explaining things. Like, I am a person who got a good reputation for being able to explain a little bit of programming. And that was right. after 20 years. Right. And so there are programs. There's like an MIT program where journalists go up and do a fellowship and learn, get better at explaining things. Like, obviously, in our world of pandemics, global warming, high technology and chaos, we need more explainers in the world. Right. Mm. And like, so I think yes. like that is a fundamental gap. Like, this doesn't function as news for a lot of people where it's like, hey, right. people are dying. So on. And it's like, you need to explain like what a virus is.
I mean, that was the thesis statement. Yeah. yeah. Vox.com, which was founded when I was part of Vox Media, when I was at The Verge, and it worked really well. They became one of the most popular news outlets, you know, in the world. And they have one of the biggest YouTube channels. And their thing was always just like, we're not going to take an angle. We're going to just explain the news. And our whole focus will be on explaining it so anybody can understand it. It actually didn't quite end up that way. They ended up with quite a bit of a political bent, I think.
And the problem is they advise, right? So they got in trouble because they advise people all sorts of things about what do you do about this? This is what's tricky. What people want is advice. Like, what do I do now?
What's the right answer? And there is no right answer.
No, and this is a great cultural test, and we're not succeeding. Like, what is the right... We see this in, bringing it back to what we're doing. Like, Sarah, how many times does somebody say, what's the right programming language to learn? Or what's
once a day, yeah.
Yeah. Right now, your cat that's in your... That's right. A beautiful cat.
Ruby on Rails.
Somebody on Twitter says, I'm just starting out. What's the best programming language? And it's like, there is no right answer.
No, so that demand for the right answer generates more and more right answers. And we are in trouble for that right now, right? Like, it's just, this is a tough one. Like, I know what a virus is. But if you said, Paul, what's a virus? And I consider myself a relatively bright individual, I'd screw it up so bad. I mean, like, it's like a little guy, it's like a spider, but he's really little and he's got RNA in him. And like, he's...
I mean, yeah, the crazy thing about viruses, and 90% of what I say now will be wrong, but here's what I think viruses are. And the crazy thing about them is that they're not alive, right? They have no metabolism and they can't reproduce. Mm-hmm. They're like a piece of cellular machinery that has gone awry, that somehow hijacks another system and infinitely tries to copy itself. But they're not even alive.
As the father of twins who's currently home for a pandemic, feeling not alive and not being able to reproduce feels very normal. I have empathy for the virus.
And as we all know from the movie I Am Legend, we will be using viruses to come up with the vaccination, which will turn us all into zombies.
Well, that is true. That is right. I mean, a vaccine is often a weakened or sort of like deadened virus that you inject into yourself to teach your immune system how to deal with the live virus.
Yeah, well, this time it doesn't work.
I mean, when you look at how we usually spend our days, and as engineers, right, we might have a little relationship to the stock market or to blockchain. Right. We do our work, we do our community stuff, and so on. Meanwhile, this enormous, enormous, like millions of paper body of knowledge, millions of paper, like on Google Scholar, it's just like sitting there, right? And people have made it their whole lives to understand it. And we're just like... We're Americans. We're like, you know what? I better figure out this virus thing.
Yeah. I think our only jobs usually is to solve problems, right? We just day in, day out, we're solving problems. And now we all have to stay home and don't even try it. Don't solve the problem.
Don't try it. Right. Yeah. Yeah. You're only, give money, like, let's get masks to nurses.
Give your money. Give them extra money that you make from doing what you do. And just don't do it.
And the other hard thing is right now, sometimes or oftentimes money is not the issue, right? Like there's no masks available to buy. There's no ventilators available to buy. Even if you had extra money, I mean, there are things you can do with it, but like some of the critical issues cannot be solved just by saying, here's the money you need. So that's, you know, a hard thing to grapple with, especially as an engineer or somebody who feels like you're always able to affect change on a problem. One of the people who's able to do things, and you know, this is great, is my wife. She's been sewing masks and sending them to people. So like, seamstresses of the world, rise up.
No, that's right. We've been making masks for all of our friends. My wife has. I've been putting Ubuntu Linux onto laptops for kids so they can get access to their digital learning. Right.
The CIA is leaving on her.
Yeah.
First step.
And you know, another thing that we saw, you know, to get back a little bit to technology and startups, is that workers went on strike for Amazon and Instacart, and what they said was, usually nobody thinks about us and it's hard for us to get rights because, you know, it's pretty easy to find somebody to do this job, but right now we are the essential workers. Mm. And so we are demanding more, you know, protections.
You know what I keep seeing is like, people expect the virus to hew to their ideology. Like you're seeing where the people are like, look, we gotta get back to work. Like people are gonna die. And other people are like, I don't wanna die. I don't want Meemaw to die. That's not cool. And it, you can see, I remember this in the 90s and 2000s, there was just this sense of solutionism. Like we're coming to the end of history and the market will solve every problem. And then the market would just explode. And then September 11th and so on. You know, there was a book, I remember it was called like Dow 100,000. That was like a big deal.
Dow 30,000.
Yeah. Which is like, we're going to just shoot through the roof in like the next 5 years. The market is just going to explode everything.
There's no stopping it.
And then that doesn't work. And then
you know what's crazy, Paul? That book came out and it was actually, I think it was like an iconic cover of Forbes magazine where they were like, we're going to Dow 30,000. And it was like, wow, like, yeah, this bull market will never end, the internet. And then of course it did. And then we were right there, Paul. We were at like 29,000 new highs. And then again, Mother Nature comes along and is like, nah.
Markets are just human beings and robots interacting, right? Like there's this weird moment where I keep thinking like, hey, when this is all over, all the bots are going to have a great time trading. Like, there's no...
I'm like all hyped. Is that what you imagine? Like all these little bots like, oh, it's time like, again.
Oh, they're... Absolutely. I think they're just going like, oh my God, when there's no humans, this is going to be amazing. Like, we're finally going to get a pure market once we get all the humans out of the
market. Yeah.
Oh, once you get humans out of the system, you're going to be able to trade like when there's no SEC to regulate and no human because there's no humans in the SEC. Just we are going to have the most pure, efficient digital market imaginable.
Wow. Imagine that's a deep thought.
Imagine blockchain with no people. It probably would keep going for about 5 years. Based
it would
on,
be
like,
essential. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. People would use it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Do you know, if you're in the mood for some feel-good reading about robots, ran through a book called Machines Like Me by Ian McEwan. McEwan, I believe it's by. And it's feel-good reading about robots. I really liked it.
Is it Machines Like Me or Machines Like Me?
Machines do like me, but it's Machines Like Me.
I'm a good person, and gosh darn it, Machines Like Me.
Machines like me.
Yeah. One thing I would love to talk about that I think has really kind of gotten pushed under the carpet a little bit, but I think is really important, is O'Reilly conferences going away.
Oof.
Yeah. Let's talk about that and talk a little bit about a number of startups that have been acquired this week because, you know, these are crazy times. Go for it, Sarah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, I mean, I definitely have stories from OzConf and Fluent and like all the people that I've met and the experiences I've had at those conferences, I think they're really huge.
We should tell people, right? Like O'Reilly conferences were the early internet as people came, like Web 2.0 and all of this stuff comes out of O'Reilly conferences. Everything is so much bigger than it used to be, so it's easy to forget, but like many of the things that we take for granted as being part of internet culture and tech culture started with O'Reilly books and then with the conferences they put on. It's the first time lots of people met. It's the first sort of thought leaders emerging out of the internet. And they've been going on for probably 20 years.
Exactly.
And they just can't, and they ended the in-person conference business. They didn't just cancel them for the pandemic.
Yeah, I mean, they did that as a drastic measure, I think maybe in part so that they could basically let everybody go. My guess would be they might try to bring it back. But for the younglings who don't know, who is O'Reilly? What did he start doing that got the interest of programmers? And then how did that transition into this events business, which was kind of foundational in Web 2.0 culture?
Tim O'Reilly, and there are many other people involved, but O'Reilly's name is on the door. Tim O'Reilly started as a technology writer, writing about like relatively obscure Unix text formatting things, and then became a publisher of really sort of deep tech books about especially Unix and early internet stuff, like the book on domain names and the book on Perl and the book on like all the sort of infrastructure that was around. And they were high quality books. They encouraged writing. They laid flat. They were good. So the earliest of the internet, the 90s internet, was really defined by these books with and they all had animals on the cover.
I love the covers. I love the O'Reilly covers.
Yeah, old lithographs. They were a real, it was just sort of a totem for human beings who were working on this stuff. You had the O'Reilly books on your shelves. Every startup had the O'Reilly books on their shelves. There were lots of other publishers, but they were the ones who were like really nerd-centric. And that also emerged into a conference business, which grew and grew and grew in significance until, you know, Web 2.0 at the Javits would have tens of thousands of people, like South by Southwest scale kind of stuff. Wow. And Stata was one that is all about big data or Stata. And so there are these various themed conferences that really, and they've grown from handfuls of people to tens of thousands of people. And as we know from conferences, they are the industry when we're all scattered the way we are. Like, they're how people come together and learn and meet each other and get new jobs. And they take over the Sheraton for a week. And it's a big deal. So Tim O'Reilly has been kind of the advisor to many a startup. And this has set the template for internet culture very, very early days.
All right, we're going to wrap it up soon. We're going to try to keep these episodes tight. So I'm going to read you guys some lifeboats and we can say our goodbyes.
All right.
Sounds great.
Awesome. Okay, here we go. On navigation item selected, not working in navigation view, awarded yesterday to Vahid. And that is from Android Fragments.
Okay.
So we hope you all are well. We know this week's going to be a rough one for a lot of people in a lot of places. We're all going to get it through it together as best we can. And you can always hit us up, podcast@StackOverflow. You can find me online @BenPopper on Twitter. I am the director of content here at Stack Overflow.
You can find me online @SarahJChips on Twitter. I'm the director of community here at Stack Overflow.
And you can find me online @FTrain on Twitter. I'm Paul Ford, the co-founder of Postlight, a digital product studio.
Wonderful.